You're listening to Radiotopia Presents from PRX's Radiotopia.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together, and we were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a six-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
This is Behind the Series, a reoccurring, series about the shows featured on this very podcast, Radiotopia Presents, from Radiotopia. I'm Mark Pagan, the host and creator of the podcast Other Men Need Help, and I'm also a producer here at Radiotopia. Today, a conversation with the team behind Radiotopia Presents' latest series that recently wrapped a four-episode run, A Hit Dog Will Holler. It's an audio fiction series based on a play by Enda Craig Galvan. Hit Dog, for short, looks at the relationship between Gina and Drew, two Black women activists whose lives become connected in very surprising ways. Today's episode is full of spoilers, so if you haven't heard the series yet, I suggest finishing all the episodes before listening to this conversation. Production on Hit Dog started back in 2021 and developed over the course of the pandemic, all done remotely, even directing the actors. And the team met up in February 2022 for the first time in person since maybe ever.
Is this the first time you all are all together since starting this project physically?
Yeah. Sandra and Inda met for the first time last night in person.
Yeah, it was a cross-country endeavor.
There are a number of people who worked on the show, from the talented actors Cynthia K. Williams, J. Nicole Brooks, and Jacqueline Guyon, to Christina Gaillard, who created music for the show. And today's in-studio conversation was with three of Hit Dog's main creators.
I'm Inda Craig Galvan. I am the writer.
I'm Giselle Regatao, and I'm the producer and director.
And I am Sandra Lopez Monsalve, the sound designer for the series.
Even though this team met for the first time in person when we were making this recording, they'd been working together over the last 5 years on two projects, starting with another audio fiction series from 2017 called Celestial Blood. And Celestial Blood's creator, Giselle, had a longing to come back to that format.
I said, okay, it's time for me to do another fiction series. And I've been a journalist for 25 years. I love to read fiction, but I've never actually written it. And I started doing it, and I was like, okay, this is just not good. Who should be the person to write it? I was like, it's Inda.
When Giselle approached me about possibly adapting one of my plays for a podcast, this felt like, to me, the one that was closest to what was happening now in our country, because it is about people who are secluded, who are quarantined in a home for different reason than the pandemic. Just zeroing in on those two women's voices in that home, dealing with that outside sound, that thing that's trying to break in, to me felt like, yeah, this absolutely could be a podcast.
I want to talk about the decision to place it in a very specific time and place. Why keep it listed so specifically?
Well, I had written the play before the pandemic. None of that existed. So it was just a play about isolation. And then when the pandemic happened, it felt weird to not acknowledge, like, are you cloistered because of that? I didn't want confusion around why she's stuck inside. It's not because of the pandemic. It's because of what's happening with Gina. Also, just wanted to dig into how I know I was feeling when there were so many shooting deaths, how people were responding primarily on social media because that's where Gina lives, and how there were a lot of statues getting toppled at the time, and there were sort of more clandestine things happening to incite change. And I just wanted to sort of encapsulate that moment.
And also, to be clear, the play is totally different. Gina is not a podcaster on the play. She's a blogger and a social media influencer. So we changed that to she's a podcaster. Drew on the play, she delivers food.
Yeah.
So we turned Drew into a sound engineer. So all this is like thinking about the podcast universe. And then the sound is like, oh my gosh, it's a perfect podcast story because one of the main characters is a sound.
To help this sonic transition from play to podcast, sound designer Sandra Lopez-Monsalve joined the team.
One of the things that I love the most about working with audio is sound design and sound design infection. So when I was growing up, there was the telenovelas, but before my grandparents would listen to radio novelas, which is radio. And my first radio station, there actually were props around the studio, a tiny door just to make the sound of the door, and many props, stuff that was not used when I was working there because the radio novela thing had waned down. But I was like, we should bring it up.
This is where some of the intricate creative details come in of how to go about moving something from the stage to an audio-only space like a podcast.
In the play, Drew is a painter, and there was this painting. And I love that about the play because I love art. And I was like, shoot, we cannot have a painting on the podcast. Yeah. What are we going to turn this into? And Inda had the idea of, like, the piano.
I really wanted there to get a sense that it's something that's large and a focal point in the home, in Gina's home, and something that's she couldn't just steal, like something she has to go a step further and destroy.
I think it was very smart to use the piano because it, with other instruments are on the move, but the piano is a space. And so when we were thinking about how we're going to move the scenes around this space, the piano had its own place within the apartment. It was in the living room. So we knew, like I knew how to direct my characters from one space to the other.
I think that specificity is important in podcasting. I think creating the space in the home and just being really specific about where people are and how they're moving, where in theater you can just say they're just in the room. You don't have to worry about the blocking because the director's going to handle that. But with this, Gina needs to walk to the booth and we need to know how far is the booth and what type of booth is it? And is it a big studio door? Is it in her apartment with just a closet? That sort of specificity, you kind of need to put that stuff in the script.
There's a bunch of these violent sounds that break up in some ways like a very intimate character study. How did the roar show up as a character in this?
It's all the bad things that we face manifested that we can't see, but you know it's there and you know it's going to eat you up. And that's what it has felt like for me watching the news or seeing my neighbors with their political signs outside. It feels like a threat. You still have to do the things. You still have to go to work. But those things are always out there waiting for you. And that's what the roar is for Gina, but bigger and compounded to the point where it's just sitting outside of her door waiting for her to come out. I wanted the roar to be so surprising for Gina and so surprisingly overwhelming for her. Like, she's a person who's got everything together and things don't bring her down, but this absolutely like lays her out and she refuses to go back outside ever again. And also I wanted what Drew hears to be equally horrific, but different because her experiences are different in the world.
You know, for me as a producer, I love the idea of a podcast producer to be a sound that is a character that symbolizes so many things that we're living, that symbolizes oppression and racism. But then it's like, how is this going to actually sound? It has to be uncomfortable. It has to be oppressive. It has to be something like very powerful. And then Sandra came in with her magic.
The first thing that I was told is the sound of oppression. And I'm like, well, this is a huge, heavy word. What oppression means, like, it means so many things to so many people. And as a woman of color, as a Latina, oppression means some stuff for me, but I'm not a Black person. So I there are things that I understand, but I don't feel like I don't live those. And I want to be respectful of that. So trying to tap into that was a huge process. When I was thinking about how to put it into words, after I did it, I actually thought about the anatomy of the roar. And I will say that it has three layers. It has materials. We use organic sounds, so we use a lot of animals in their feral state, like when they're about to attack or when they are growling. It has a lot of inorganic sounds, what I call. Something I love to do in New York City over the summers is go to the beach, go to our beach called Rockaway Beach. To go to this beach, you can use a ferry. In the ferry, before you land in Rockaway, there is a bridge. So when the ferry goes under, there is a particular noise because the bridge is made out of steel. So that was a non-organic sound. The third is what I call hate and pain. And it's because when we were discussing what the roar means is what is happening around us and how many people just embrace hate in a way. Why don't I go and look for in social media and see, like, this is a Black Lives Matter story, so I'm gonna look for footage of the protest and see what I can find. And then in those like hours of research, I end up finding clips of the Ku Klux Klan, a lot of clips of people attacking each other after the protests. We have two characters. We have Drew and we have Gina. So I actually created two different roars. Gina's roar, it has a lot of I hate you, like racist stuff. But Drew's roar has a lot of homophobic comments under. So I wanted to bring a little bit of that as well, because people that are in the LGBTQI community face hate all the time. And it's also part of the story. It's in layers. So there are so many sounds that the idea is that it became a monster per se.
I just want to say I appreciate the fact that you, that Sandra, blended the sounds so that we're not also re-traumatizing the audience.
As the team mentioned earlier, Hit Dog is very much set in a specific time and place, namely the United States around 2020. With that decision come some considerations, like how much do we acknowledge real-world events, and maybe a trickier question, how much do we explicitly reference real-world people?
So, for instance, we have a president that's referenced, that's a real-world president, a former real-world president. We have some influencers and some people that are very directly referenced. And then we have people that are fictionalized.
It's placed in set in the real world. So I think using Obama's name or referencing that other dude, referencing the horrible people that I reference, I have no problem with that. But I don't ever want to use someone's child or someone's loved one who has been murdered. So we made up the character of Vysander Davis. It just feels very, very wrong to capitalize on someone's real life tragedy for the sake of art or entertainment. So that's why I don't use any references to real people who have been hurt.
These two projects that all of you have worked on together, this doesn't feel like the right label. I'd be curious to hear what you all feel is more appropriate label, but a sense of magic realism in some of this work, the use of magic realism in telling these kinds of stories. I wanted to throw that as just a link that I was seeing in some of the work that you all were doing and how magic realism has affected you as a creator. And if it is something that you consciously think of applying with stories that are dealing with contemporary issues.
That's pretty much all I do. It's pretty accurate description, Mark. I tell pretty grounded stories, but use that sort of magical realism to express what's happening, what the metaphor is of the story, or what's happening inside a character's mind. When I'm consuming work, I'm not as attracted to things that are just realism, because I'm like, I can just be in the world.
Well, I think the magic realism is like, that's where I come from, right? I'm Brazilian. That's the literature I grew up reading. And Gabriel Garcia Marquez, 100 Years of Solitude, he's from Colombia, where Sandra is from. But also, I think one thing we haven't talked about is the sense of humor. That's one of the reasons why I like this play so much, because it's dealing with a very difficult topic, but it's so funny. You know, Gina is funny. So the magical realism and the sense of humor kind of help us enjoy the story as much as we are suffering in the story.
Going to what Giselle was saying, what are your laugh out loud moments? Like, what were your favorite moments of levity in these four episodes? And what scenes from the four episodes are most personally relevant or most relevant for you as a listener?
The part when Gina is telling Drew, like, do you like being gay? Do you like being black? Because it's who you are.
Do you want to be queer? What about black? Do you want to be part of two marginalized communities? I mean, good for you if you do. Love yourself and let the world meet you there and all, but Drew, even if you didn't want it, that's still your reality. You can't change either one of those facts. That's the reality of who you are.
Drew is talking to Ronnie about being 16 and what they think about when they think about when they were 16. And Ronnie talks about going to the pool and realizing like she didn't shave or her pubic hair is coming out of her bikini.
I was going to a pool party that Naomi Driscoll was having at the Y. And I swear from the time I hit puberty at like 13, every single time I looked, there was a new damn hair poking out from the side of my panties. I was so paranoid that I'd walk around that pool in my bathing suit thinking I looked cute. And there'd be a dang on bush waving hi to everybody.
But then, of course, they are reflecting about Vysander Davis, who is the character that has been killed by police, and he's 16. So I am a mother of a 17-year-old who is Latino as well as I am, and is brown. So I think even if he weren't, I think for any mother, that is really, you know, it's been 10 years since Trayvon Martin was killed, and I think about him all the time, and I feel pain when I think about him and his parents. So for me, that scene kind of brought both the pain, the suffering, but also the lightness of Inda's writing.
The second time I've written a story about a young black male who has been killed. I'm like, why do I keep doing this to myself? It's hard, but it's a reality for so many of us that I think we have to deal with. I'm interested in telling stories of how people survive and how people keep fighting. But let's talk about a comedy thing. There is a moment where Gina's explaining to Drew how she got her there so quickly. I think it's in the first episode. And she's like, I threatened your boss. I might have offered to sleep with him. I don't remember. I just needed somebody here to fix the soundproofing or install the soundproofing. And the first time I heard it, Cynthia delivers that line so exquisitely, I laughed out loud. And I almost forgotten that I had written it.
I might have cussed your dispatcher out. And then bribed him. Girl, I might have offered to fuck him. I don't even remember exactly. I just needed somebody to get here ASAP.
Gotcha.
Now that this is done, and presumably people that are listening to this have listened to four episodes, or they will be. They will be listening to four episodes. What's a companionate piece to A Hit Dog Will Holler that you'd recommend?
I would hand you this poem by Etheridge Knight called On the Yard. The play was inspired by this poem about a man who's incarcerated, who is writing lots and lots of words, and someone comes into his world to say, all those words you're writing aren't really doing anything. It's about, like, what are we saying? What are we putting out into the world? And what are we, versus what we're actually doing? How are we practicing our politics? The play was inspired by the poem. Thus, the podcast is inspired by that.
I could say so many things. I guess I'm going to go back to Toni Morrison and James Baldwin, because I think they are like masters of American literature who have for so long talked about this very same issues. And I guess I'm going to talk about music, because I love music and I love jazz. And that's one of the music that I listen to the most, like Jason Moran and Terrence Blanchard, who just did a piece at the Metropolitan Opera. The first time a Black American composed a piece at the Metropolitan Opera in its 138-year history. I'm going to also talk about Christina Gaillard, who is the composer who composed the music for A Dog Will Holler. So I will also recommend her music.
There is a song by my best friend, Gabriel Guerrero, who is a jazz pianist and composer, and it's called Land of the Free. You guys need to look for it, but I think I will recommend that one because it's piano.
In the room with us right now, this is a little Easter egg for the listener. What do we have, Sandra?
We need to give each character a trait, like something that will make them them. So I figure, okay, Gina is more like, I don't know, like she's more thinking about herself. I imagine Gina like taking care of her hair, like, and of course thinking about jewelry. So the bracelets were a really easy way to present her in a place. So if you hear the bracelets, you know Gina is around. And you know, she's moving from one side and she's gesturing, she's mad, she's sad, she's scared, she's like, the bracelets were the prop to help tell that part that is non-verbal. So those are the bracelets that we have here.
I love those bracelets, by the way.
You can hear Sandra's bracelets and all four episodes of A Hit Dog Will Holler in the Radiotopia Presents feed, where you're listening to this episode right now. Behind the Series is an original Radiotopia Presents series from PureX's Radiotopia. It's hosted, written, and produced by me, Mark Pagan. Hello. Music from J.D. Sampson, Blue Dot Sessions, and Christina Gaillard. Audrey Martovich and Julie Shapiro are executive producers. Thanks to the Hit Dog team, Sandra Lopez-Monsalve, Giselle Regatao, and Enda Craig Galvan. And thank you to Josh at the Brooklyn Podcasting Studio where this interview was recorded. If you want a peek at the recommendations from the Hit Dog team, just take a look in our show notes where we've added some links to get you there. Want to learn more about your favorite shows, get audio recommendations, event updates, and podcast news? Sign up for the Radiotopia newsletter. It's super easy. You just go to radiotopia.fm/citizen or click the link in the show notes. Thank you all for joining us for this episode of Behind the Series.
Radiotopia.